My name is Rachel Rofe. I created the show because I wanted to help you see that if you have a choice, you can choose a better life. If you're listening to this podcast, you're in a pretty fortunate position. You have free will, ability to connect to the internet, and access to all kinds of new education. This podcast is meant to help you make the most of your good fortune. We talk with all kinds of people here from all walks of life because I want you to see that no matter what your situation, there's always a way to create a life that you're proud of. Hello, everyone. Today we're here with Derek Depker. Derek is the author of multiple number one best-selling books, including Why You're Stuck and 50 Fitness Tips You Wish You Knew. In 2012, he founded the blog Excuse Proof Fitness to help people who are busy, broke, or unmotivated find simple solutions to any of their challenges. Derek is passionate about empowering people to discover solutions to their own challenges by using simple tricks to unlock the brain's creative problem-solving ability. He spent years studying the world's top psychologists and personal development experts to piece together the most powerful and practical tools for transforming anyone's life. I actually met Derek a couple years ago. We've both been in internet marketing. And what I really liked about him that was kind of different for a lot of people in the internet marketing niche, when he introduced himself, it was just very nice, very much about not asking for something. Like you come across as a very cool guy there. It was like, and you were talking to me about what you could do for me versus asking what I could do for you. And it's just been really easy to be around you. And so I'm really glad that you expressed interest in coming on the podcast. And I started reading, I was just telling Derek before we started the podcast, I started reading Why You're Stuck, his book. And it's actually really, really great. It's like a lot of unique information. It's written in a very clear and concise way. I think it's just phenomenal. And I think this podcast is going to be great. So Derek, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you, Rachel, so much for having me on. It's my pleasure to be here and share anything I can value with your listeners.
Awesome, awesome. So the way that I start out the podcast is just to kind of the intention, you know, behind a better life is to show people that if they have a choice, they can choose a better life, which I know is something you're totally on board with. Can you take a minute to share with us some of the things that you're most proud of in your life right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the big accomplishments that I had early on was I'm actually a musician and a guitar player. So when I was 12 years old, I got into playing guitar. And that was one of the early wins that I had was I got really good at it. And it taught me that I could, you know, put my mind to something, practice, be horrible at it when I first get into it, but actually really develop my skills. And that taught me a lot about the growth mindset. And so I got my degree in music, graduated with honors from Belmont University, and that was one of my big accomplishments was getting my music degree and a lot of the experiences I got there. Another big accomplishment that I've had that I'm really proud of would be publishing books and some books that have become number one bestsellers at this point. And that's not something I would have ever expected myself to do or pull off. You know, if you would have asked me 5 years ago, if I could have even done something like that, I don't think I would have even thought that was possible. So going through that journey and doing that. And then through that, I think one thing now that I wake up each day and I'm so grateful for as I think about it is that I basically have a lifestyle where I've managed to achieve a certain degree of financial freedom where I can wake up and I can do what I love for a living. Because I know just thinking back to the times in my life where I was working at a job, and not that I've had the worst jobs in the world, but there's just something that's kind of unfulfilling when I knew that I had more potential and talent. I had something to offer the world and I wasn't really able to share that with people because I was, you know, kind of stuck in these jobs. So now that I get to wake up and have the freedom to do what I want and really hopefully help people and help transform their lives in the way that my life has been transformed from some of the coaches and mentors that I've had, that's, I think, really the ultimate highlight for me in my life right now.
Those are amazing things. And, you know, you're talking about how you transformed. And one of the things I was reading in your book is just about where you were when you were 18. And I know it's been like a decade since then, but I thought it was still just such a vast difference to where you are now. And I would love if you can just take a minute to tell people about where you were when you were 18 so people can see just kind of how much someone can grow.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things I guess another point of accomplishment is with my health and fitness. So back when I was 18 years old, probably about 17, 18, obviously still in high school, And up to that point, actually with my health habits, I was eating fast food every single night. And I can still remember my mom trying to like make me a healthy meal. And I used to eat. I had to go to McDonald's or something. And I wasn't overweight necessarily, but I just, you know, terrible shape in terms of my performance in gym class and stuff. That so happened where I read a book that opened my mind, expanded my awareness about the consequences that the different foods and my lifestyle choices was having on me. And it was through that that kind of started me on this journey of health and fitness, which would later tie into a lot of the other things I learned about psychology and motivation and personal development. And so at the age of 18, I got into the gym. I was working out, you know, multiple times a week, completely transformed my diet and got in great shape. And I kept that up for the, you know, the past 10 years of my life. And so what that showed me was that I wasn't really stuck with this identity that I had or with my habits. I could go from hating something, hating exercise, hating healthy food. And I learned that there's simple things that I could do in reframing things and working with my psychology to actually embrace those things and love them and make it a part of my lifestyle. And when I saw that that was possible just in that one area of life, health and fitness, then it started getting me to think, well, can I do this with other areas of my life, with, you know, my social skills or with just developing the habit of being happier or all these other things, as well as if I could transform myself like that, would it be possible to teach other people how to do the same? So that's been kind of the journey. I'm 28 years old now. You know, it's been about 10 years of really digging deep into understanding how that transformation took place in myself so I can duplicate it in other areas of my life and being able to share those insights with other people so they can have their own breakthrough transformations.
Awesome. So two questions. The first one is just a quick one. You mentioned the book that you read in your book too, but you didn't say what it was. I'm so curious. What book was it that you read that had you change your habits?
Yeah, the book is called The Wrinkle Cure by Nicholas Pericombe. Kind of an interesting book to read at 18 years old. I don't remember exactly how I first heard about it, but it gave a lot of the science behind it. Reading about that really opened my mind to this idea, and this is an important concept, that it's not about the consequences that are going to happen to me when I'm 80 years old if I eat a poor diet. It's realizing that my lack of energy, the fatigue that I was feeling, a lot of things that I was going through at that moment in time were a direct consequence of my diet. It made me realize that, you know, I didn't necessarily have 30 years that I could just keep eating how I was eating before it would catch up with me. I was doing damage to my body, you know, right at that moment, every time I chose to just indulge in, you know, terribly unhealthy foods. So that was the book, and that's kind of one of the big shifts that took place for me.
That's awesome. Now, the other thing I wanted to ask is you said that when you were starting to change your habits around eating well, it was just a matter of reframing and different things with psychology. And then you mentioned you were able to apply it to other things too, like social skills and happiness. And just because I know a lot of people talk about diet and health and stuff, I would love, can you tell us maybe with the social skills, what you did to change around, do reframing and kind of change wherever you were? Maybe tell us about where you were and then to where you are now and how you did it?
Absolutely. So in terms of social skills, I think, you know, if there's one book I can recommend, it'd be How to Win Friends and Influence People. I think the first key word there is even skill. And skill is something that can be developed. So before anything, any change took place in my life, whether it was with my diet or my social skills, it took having a growth mindset. The realization that I'm not stuck at my current level. I can always practice these things. I can always learn new skills, work on it, and get better. Because if a person doesn't believe they can get better, if they believe, well, I'm the way I am, nothing I can do about it, then, you know, no change can take place from that mindset. So first of all, realizing, okay, I can read this book. It's going to share tips and advice with me. And one of the things that helped me, let's say with that book, is because I am very much an introvert. I still am. I embrace it. I love that quality about me. But I'm not one to necessarily talk about trivial things, and I didn't appreciate it. And so reading that book taught me to appreciate things like taking an interest in other people, being more interested in them versus trying to get other people interested in me, the value of small talk and why we engage in small talk and how you can use that to lead to something else. So I had to understand it. I had to appreciate it. And then in terms of the practical application, it was really just a matter of, you know, shooting for really small targets when it comes to developing these things. So for someone with social skills, it might be, I'm just going to practice making more eye contact with people. And that's all they focus on. You know, it's one little small step that might be uncomfortable at first. And then, you know, for me, it'd be, okay, look people more in the eye in conversations. And then as I get comfortable with that, you know, have a question that I can ask them about their life that would get them to open up about something they're excited about. And just taking little small practices that I could work on kind of one at a time where I'd never feel overwhelmed, then gradually those things improved. And also learning how to do it in a way that's congruent with my personality and accepting that I don't have to be, let's say, if we're, you know, sticking with social skills, I don't have to be the life of the party. That doesn't mean I can't still develop these skills and find my own role in things.
Mm. So you mentioned like the eye contact. How did you get to even identify these little things such as the eye contact that you should do? Was it through reading the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, and just identifying what some of the core behaviors are?
That's a really good question. And the answer is there's really two parts to developing a skill or developing yourself. And I consider it kind of like the internal and the external. So what the external would be getting information from other people. So, you know, if someone wants to learn how to exercise or improve their social skills, there's someone else out there who's figured this stuff out. Maybe there's scientific research or someone's got the proven solution. So yes, reading books, hearing from other people, you know, hey, here's something that you can do that would be helpful. That's part of it. But there's also the internal, and I believe that we really have a lot of the answers to our challenges within ourselves. So if I were to just simply ask myself, you know, if there's one thing I can do to be a little bit better today or a little bit better in this area, what would it be? And there's a good chance I would probably have an answer for what that would be. So I'm going to jump quickly to a diet example because that's the stuff that comes most readily to mind. When I was improving my diet, I didn't know what the best diet was when I first got started and I wanted to eat healthier, but I didn't have to read a book to realize that, oh, eating French fries is not going to be as good when I go to a restaurant as eating some steamed vegetables. So I'd make the choice to get the steamed vegetables. A lot of us, we already kind of know those little tweaks that we can make to make things a little bit better where we don't even need to read a book. We can start with the things we already know. And as we're going through that process, then we can start to, you know, add in, you know, piece by piece, information from outside sources to help take things even further.
Awesome. And I am such a proponent of asking yourself the right questions. I've probably said that on like every other podcast at this point, but it's such a good point. It's just, I think we all have this access to this just universal intelligence. And the way I usually do it is, how can I make it inevitable that whatever? And it's amazing how easy it works. One thing that I think you covered really well in your book, sometimes people feel like they want something, like let's say they are very clear with themselves, they want to lose 10 pounds, but then when it comes time to going on a diet, they don't actually do it. Can you explain just what you think that discrepancy is for people, why people can feel so sure, yes, I'm starting tomorrow, I want to lose 10 pounds, and then the first thing they do is like go for a donut, or maybe it's the second thing they do, whatever?
Absolutely. There's two key points that I want to address with that. And one has to do with the feeling that I notice a lot of people are dealing with this, especially in today's day and age where we have so many distractions, there's so much stuff going on, and this one feeling will keep people stuck, possibly more than anything else, and that's feeling overwhelmed. They think about all the things that they need to do to get started on the journey. And so, you know, if a person says, okay, I'm going to change my diet, then there can be a lot of things with that. And so they see all these different steps at once, and that leads to feeling like it's too much. And there's a great quote, I heard it from Alex Mandozian, I don't know if he's the originator of it, and that is, we can't do everything, but we can do anything one thing at a time. If I think about cleaning my apartment, I think about all the different things I know. I got to clean my countertops, I got to move this stuff, I got to go and clean the bathroom, I got to put this stuff, it's too much. But if I think, okay, you know, what's just my one next thing that I need to do. And it might be, okay, just organize my desk, right? That's not overwhelming because it's one thing. So focusing on single action steps, where if a person says, I want to eat healthier, what's one step they can take to eat healthier and focus on that for the next week? So what I recommend people do is they just focus on one single change they can make at a time that's so easy that there's no way they can't do it. So for instance, they might say, well, you know, can I just make a smoothie for breakfast? Is that easy enough to do? Not worry about the lunch, not worry about dinner, not worry about all the other stuff. Just find one positive action to take and focus on that until it becomes a habit, and then work on the other stuff. And then the other thing, and this kind of goes into this whole idea of, well, what about the temptations? What about the donuts that are just too irresistible, or the cookies, or for me, it's the ice cream. So when it comes to this stuff, a lot of times what people do is they use a certain type of language pattern with themselves. And that's like, I can't have those cookies, right? I'm on a diet, I'm eating better, I can't have the cookies, don't eat the cookies, whatever it is, don't eat the donuts. And what happens is there's a term I learned in psychology called reactance. And what that means is when someone tells you you can't do something, we don't like that. It feels like they're stripping away our freedom. Someone bosses you around, says, you can't do that, or go do this, you need to do this. We don't like it. We feel like our sense of making a choice is taken away from us. Well, the important thing to understand is that we can do that to ourselves. So every time I say, you know, Derek, you can't eat that ice cream, don't eat it, don't eat those donuts, I'm basically bossing myself around, and that actually creates resentment almost with ourselves, and it feels like we're losing out on something that we love. Okay, so obviously if a person feels like they're losing out on something, then they're not going to want to be, you know, very excited or motivated about it. So there's a really simple way to get around this. And what that is by creating a choice for yourself and understanding the long-term consequences for it. So if someone came up to me and said, hey, Derek, do you want a donut or do you want a salad? I'm going to say I'd rather have the donut. But if you say, Derek, in 5 years from now, do you want to be overweight and sick and have no energy? Or in 5 years from now, do you want to have, you know, a great body, totally fit and full of energy and healthy? And obviously, I'm going to choose the second option. Well, the difference between these two scenarios is one is we're looking at the short term. The other one, we're looking at the long term. When it comes to making better choices, we want to also consider what's going to happen a year down the road if I continue to make this choice. What's going to happen 5 years down the road? So with the donut versus salad situation, I would ask myself, you know, would I rather eat this donut and know that it's going to keep me from reaching my goals? I'm not even going to feel that good after I eat it. It's going to take me longer to lose the weight or whatever it is that I'm trying to do. Or would I rather eat this salad, feel good about myself, and have the great, healthy, fit body that I've always wanted? So by asking that question and making it a choice, it's no longer something you're forcing on yourself. You're giving yourself options and recognizing the consequence of each option. And as a person gets more in the habit of asking themselves questions, hey, do I want to do this or do I want to do that? And here's what's going to happen either way. Then we start to make choices. We have that sense of freedom restored whenever we're doing this stuff. And it's not just this constant battle of willpower of don't do that, don't do that, don't do that.
Yeah, so I totally agree with you. And I know that they say in studies for success that one of the greatest indicators of success is the ability to delay instant gratification. So I'm totally on board with you. And I'm also curious, just to play devil's advocate, if I were to ask myself, let's say, you know, I know in 5 years from now, or even like after this, I'm going to feel sluggish if I have this donut, whatever, and I decide I still want the donut. If you were talking to me and I was telling you, I know all that, I still want the donut.
Okay, well, there's one thing, and that is having the donut, and this is where it's important just as the disclaimer, not to go to the extremes, having the donut isn't always bad. You know, there's times where I'm going to have the ice cream, I'm going to have the cookies and stuff like that. Because it's not necessarily about going to, like, I can never indulge in something that I enjoy. Because really, is a donut bad for someone? Well, it depends. If it's in moderation on occasion as a treat, it can be perfectly fine. But when it's taken too too far. You know, if a person's eating a donut every single meal and that's all they eat, well, then they're going to have problems. So first thing is almost allowing yourself to have the occasional treats and recognizing things like that. Now, if it's a person who's just constantly struggling, though, every time they ask themselves that question, they make the less ideal choice, then it can be a matter of digging a little deeper into what needs that poor behavior is meeting. One thing to understand is all our habits and all our bad habits are fulfilling us on some level. So if a person is in an abusive relationship, for instance, taking it in a different direction, some people might sit back and look at that and be like, why in the world would a person stick around that relationship? And the answer is, as much pain as they might be going through, it's fulfilling them on some level. They're getting a feeling of connection with another human being, that if they broke up that relationship and they got out of it, they would lose that feeling of connection. That donut, for some person, might be the only option they have to feel comfort. And that might be their way of relieving stress. And all they know how to do to relieve stress is eat donuts. That's their coping mechanism. And if you strip that coping mechanism away from them, then they don't have anything else to take its place. So they're almost dependent on that donut or on that bad habit to meet certain needs that they have. And just real quickly, the human needs from the research of Chloe Madonis and Anthony Robbins, it's a connection, significance, certainty, variety, contribution, and growth. So you can get a lot deeper into all that, but if a person really has a hard time giving up something, there's a good chance it's because they need to find something else that's healthier to meet that need before they can get rid of that bad habit.
That's such a great point. First of all, I'm glad you mentioned the six human needs because that was my next question. But before we get into that, I mean, just with the what need am I missing with the donut, it makes me think about, I read from this person named Sarah Jink. She has a program called Live More, Weigh Less. And she talks about exactly what you're talking about, how a lot of times eating things, it gives us some kind of unmet need. And I know, like, especially sugary things, it gives us like the quick rush of, I don't know if it's dopamine or just we feel better when we eat this stuff. And so she said for her, whenever she would like find herself wanting to have a piece of chocolate or something, she would ask herself what she was looking for, and then she'd go look to replicate it elsewhere. So the example that she gave was that she would go and she would, on her lunch breaks, walk to this like nail place and get a 15-minute shoulder massage, like when she was on her break or on her lunch or whatever, instead of going and eating the junk food. And she said it really worked for her very well. And she kept making these little things that would eventually like have her lose a bunch of weight. So it's pretty cool. So on the six different human needs, you mentioned them. Can you tell us a little bit more about what each one means and how important they are for each person?
Yeah, absolutely. So start with the first need, which I'll say is certainty. And certainty, another word for that could be comfort. We want to be, you know, a certain degree of safety, security, all these things kind of tie into that. I want to know that I can pay my bills. That's my certainty need. I want to know that the building I'm in isn't going to collapse down on top of me. That's certainty, right? And then there's uncertainty or variety. And you'll notice, so with these two, they're kind of two ends of a spectrum. So on one hand, we want certainty. On the other hand, we want uncertainty or variety. Well, first of all, what does variety mean? Well, that's fun. That's excitement. That's, I don't want it to be too routine and boring every single day. I like things to be a little bit different. Right? So you can actually see just with those two needs, some people who are, you know, they do the same thing every day, they're on the set routine, they go to the same restaurants, they order the same foods, all that stuff, very high certainty needs. Someone who's always looking for something different, they get bored easily, they're like, they can't do the same thing over and over, they always got to switch it up. That's a person that really values variety. Now, of course, we all want both of these to some degree. And the analogy I give with certainty and variety is like, you know, if I'm going to go see a movie, I might read some of the reviews. I might, you know, watch a trailer or read a little bit about what the movie's about because I want enough certainty to know that I'm not going to be wasting my time. It's going to be a good movie, something that I enjoy. But I want to maintain a little bit of uncertainty. It's like it's still a surprise what happens. So we're kind of balancing those two different needs in different ways. So there's a lot of stuff that can go into that. in terms of how we meet our certainty needs, how we meet our variety needs, but we have both and they coexist. So those are the first two.
And can I ask a quick question about that?
Yeah, sure thing.
Thank you. So how do you know like how much certainty and uncertainty each person needs?
Well, one thing to point out is that it's constantly changing and it's dynamic. So for instance, a person who's had a lot of certainty in their life, let's start out with this. Let's say a younger person, they might be going through periods where, let's say in high school, college, it's all about fun and excitement. You know, let's do crazy things. And they're very much, you know, their primary thing is like, let's get some variety. And then maybe they get a little older and they get tired of that. And they're like, well, let's go to more certainty, you know, for this period of my life. I need more stability and a job and security. And then after a period of time, they could hit like midlife and they go, oh, things have just been so routine. Is this all there is to life? And then they want to go out and they want to have fun again or whatever. So it's constantly shifting. Some people might have a personality that naturally wants more certainty. Some people might want more variety. Some it goes back and forth. But as far as recognizing it in others and yourself, I usually look at, you know, what are my patterns of behavior? What is my language? If I talk to someone, for instance, and they're always like, I'm not sure. I hear all these conflicting things. I don't know what to do. Sometimes they even use the word certain. I'm not certain what to do or whatever. You know that at least for that particular situation, they really want certainty. If you hear someone go, it's boring. It's routine. It's the same thing all the time. If they're talking like that, or if that's what I'm saying to myself, I'm like, oh, I'm looking for variety. I'm trying to get my variety needs. So it's kind of a learned skill to start to explore yourself and how you're meeting these different needs. And another point, while you know I'm still early on in the whole explaining the needs, is that a lot of times the things that we really like to do are meeting multiple needs, if not all the needs at the same time. So once again, watching a movie could be certainty and uncertainty needs being met simultaneously. Carrying on with the other human needs, we have connection, which is our desire to fit in with people. So if you think, you know, it's pretty hardwired into our biology that we want to be part of the tribe. It's important that people like us and we have their approval. And then at the other end of the spectrum, though, is significance. I want to be special. I want to apart from other people. So just those two phrases, I want to fit in and I want to stand apart. They're kind of contradictory, almost opposite things, and yet we want both. But a person will usually prioritize one or the other. And in terms of masculine, feminine type of dynamics, the feminine usually wants more connection. They want more collaboration with other people. They want people's approval. They're not as likely to rock the boat and stuff. And this is a generalization, you know, so this is, and this isn't man, woman, it's masculine, feminine. And then for the masculine, it's usually, I want to be special. I want to compete and prove that I can dominate and be the best and stuff like that. So that's more the significance and even can be kind of controlling of other people and things when a person has high significance needs. So if both these things get taken to the extreme, for instance, if a person has too much desire for a connection, they'll just be a doormat. They'll do whatever anyone tells them to do because they don't want to break that connection with people. And for a person who has too much significance, and that's something they've taken to the extreme, they might boss people around. They might try to be talking about why they're better than everyone else. They might try to control other people. Very sort of what we typically think of as egotistical behavior when that's taken to the extreme. But obviously, we want to have a healthy balance of both. We want to fit in, we want to have that connection and collaboration with people, but we also want to have enough significance that we don't become a doormat, let people walk all over us, and can maintain a healthy sense of independence amongst ourselves. So those are how those two needs kind of work together. And then finally, there's contribution and growth. And these are called like the spiritual needs or the needs that we have to be fulfilled, you know, truly fulfilled as people. So I also kind of compare this to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. If people are familiar with that, there's basically like your survival needs and, you know, food, shelter, stuff like that. But then at the top of the hierarchy is reaching my fullest potential. It's no longer just about me. It's about how can I share my gifts with the world? How can I help other people? So that's contribution, and growth is this desire that I'm better today than I was yesterday, or I'm better today than